Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
And it's very sad to see that we are once again at a point in history where people believe that it's okay to express their political sentiments through violence. And so I think it really demonstrates that we have to calm things down. We have to decide that we are going to be more respectful as an American society, that it's okay to disagree.
San Francisco's district attorney makes a plea for decency in the national discourse following the politically motivated attack on Nancy Pelosi's husband. And now we're learning more about what the suspect had planned for the Speaker of the House. Meanwhile, that disturbing attack is becoming a punchline for more and more Republicans. The latest coming from the far-right nominee for governor of Arizona. And also ahead, affirmative action goes before the Supreme Court, with justices hearing arguments in two cases tied to college admissions. Good morning, and welcome to Way Too Early on this Tuesday, November 1st. We are exactly 1 week from Election Day. I'm Jonathan Lemire. Thanks for starting your day with us. The man accused of breaking into House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's home and brutally attacking her 82-year-old husband has been hit with a slew of state and federal charges. The Department of Justice has charged David DePape with attempted kidnapping and assault with intent to retaliate against a federal official by threatening or injuring a family member. Hours later, the San Francisco District Attorney charged the 42-year-old with attempted murder, burglary, assault with a deadly weapon, elder abuse, false imprisonment, and for threats to a public official and their family. According to the federal complaint, DePape planned to kidnap the House Speaker when he broke into her San Francisco home last Friday, not realizing that she was back in Washington, D.C. Federal prosecutors say the suspect told San Francisco police he was going to hold the House Speaker hostage and talk to her, and that if she lied, he was going to break her kneecaps. According to the federal complaint, he added, quote, she would then have to be wheeled into Congress, which would show other members of Congress there were consequences to actions. The assailant articulated that he viewed Nancy Pelosi as the leader of the pack of lies told by the Democratic Party. The suspect also told investigators he wanted to use the House Speaker to lure someone else to him, but the complaint did not specify who that person could be. During a news conference yesterday, the San Francisco DA said it appears the attack was indeed politically motivated.
What we also have learned is that the defendant brought to the location of the Pelosi residence a second hammer, as well as zip ties, rope, and a roll of tape. What is clear based on the evidence that we have thus far is that this house and the speaker herself were specifically targets of the defendant.
The accused attacker is set to be arraigned later today. The district attorney says she wants him held without bail. At last check, Paul Pelosi was still in the ICU. The House Speaker released a statement yesterday that reads in part, "We have been deluged with thousands of messages conveying concern, prayers, and warm wishes. We are most grateful. Thank you to the excellent trauma care medical team at Zuckerberg San Francisco General Hospital. Paul is making steady progress on what will be a long recovery process. Our family thanks everyone for their kindness." Meanwhile, Carrie Lake is the latest Republican to mock the attack on Pelosi's husband. The GOP nominee for governor of Arizona made a joke about the attack during a town hall last night. She was asked about increasing school safety, and this was her response.
It is not impossible to protect our kids at school. They act like it is. Nancy Pelosi, well, she's got protection when she's in D.C. Apparently her house doesn't have a lot of protection.
NBC News reached out to Lake's campaign, which responded by saying her remarks didn't need clarifying. With the midterms now just 1 week away, President Joe Biden will hit the campaign trail today with a trip to Florida. In Fort Lauderdale, the president is set to discuss what his administration has done to strengthen Medicare and Social Security protections for all Americans. This while also taking aim at plans laid out by Florida Senator Rick Scott that the Biden administration says puts the health care of millions of seniors at risk. Scott, the chairman of the National Republican Senatorial Committee, has proposed putting all government programs, including Medicare and Social Security, up for renewal every 5 years. When asked earlier this year about concerns that the proposal could lead to health care cuts for seniors, the senator had this to say.
I want to preserve these programs.
But you're opening the door to eliminating those programs if you say they have to be renewed every 5 years.
Well, woof, they're going bankrupt. Shouldn't we have a conversation? I mean, woof, if you have no money in your bank account, shouldn't you figure out how you solve the problem?
It's also worth noting that before entering politics, Scott oversaw a company that pleaded guilty to committing one of the largest cases of fraud against Medicare in history. President Biden will also reunite with former President Barack Obama on the campaign trail this weekend. The White House says the two leaders will take the stage together in Philadelphia on Saturday to stump for Pennsylvania's Democratic nominees for governor and Senate, Josh Shapiro and John Fetterman, respectively. Polls show Shapiro holding a healthy lead over his GOP opponent, Doug Mastriano, who was at the Capitol on January 6th. Fetterman, though, has seen his once sizable lead over Republican Mehmet Oz shrink down to the low single digits in recent weeks, as concerns linger about his health following a stroke that he suffered earlier this year. Joining us now, Associate Professor of Political Science at Fordham University, our friend Christina Greer. Professor Greer, thank you so much for joining us. We are indeed 1 week away from the midterm elections. Races tightening across the board. Political analysts on both sides of the party say the House leaning Republican, but the Senate appears to be a true toss-up. What's your take, and what should the party's closing arguments be?
Well, it's very concerning, John, because we know if the Republicans take over the House, they've already decided that they're going to start impeachment proceedings on Joe Biden just because they haven't given any rationale or any reason. They just said they're going to impeach him, and that's where we'll start. So policy and the legislative process will essentially come to a halt. What I'm excited about, I guess, is I'm looking at turnout. We know that young people hopefully will recognize that, you know, it's not just about Social Security and Medicare on the ballot, which are incredibly important, but they're concerned about student debt. Men and women are concerned about a woman's right to choose and what this next iteration of Congress will do, not just economically, but when we think about some of our democratic principles that have been part of our foundation in these past few decades that Republicans are slowly chipping away at.
Yeah, and it's certainly there are these pocketbook issues. The economy is front of mind for a lot of voters. There are, of course, these existential issues like a woman's right to choose. And now in the final days, we also have these larger threats, frankly, to our national discourse and sense of stability. And that includes this attack over the weekend, politically motivated attack aimed for Nancy Pelosi, her husband critically injured. What do you make of where we are right now? Not only that the rhetoric and the environment could fuel an attack like this, but now we're hearing a Republican response that, whether it's from Carrie Lake or Donald Trump Jr. or any number of others, both defending the suspect in some ways, whataboutism, and in mm-hmm. some instances, jokes.
I mean, John, you know, we've been talking about politics together for quite some time, and I can't believe that we're in this particular moment. This is an 82-year-old grandfather, for Pete's sake, and you know, no one deserves to be attacked. The fact that Republican leadership has been silent, the fact that some in Republican leadership have been joking about this, lets us know that, you know, Republicans, they love their whataboutism. They love their, you know, both sides conversations. But when it comes to human decency and respect, besides the conspiracy theories that are running rampant, this is someone, you know, Nancy Pelosi has been a public servant the vast majority of her life. I cannot believe that the Republican Party thinks it's okay for anyone to break into their home and not only threaten, but really harm. This is an 82-year-old man who's currently in the ICU. We've seen this with Gabby Giffords. We've seen this with other elected officials who have either been attacked or killed. as public servants in this country. And so the fact that the Republican Party is not taking this seriously, the fact that so many in leadership we hear behind closed doors, they think that this is something that's absolutely terrible, but they won't speak out on it. I think it speaks to a larger issue, John, that we keep talking about, which is the silence of Republican leadership when human decency should be what they lead with, and they absolutely will not. They are so afraid of their base. They're so afraid of the dragon that they have created that is now turning on them and will bite them, just ask Liz Cheney. And so they remain silent when they have to speak out. We absolutely cannot have anyone who attacks elected officials, Democrat or Republican. And the fact that you have a gubernatorial candidate from the state of Arizona making light of these attacks is really shameful. And I think what's even more shameful is that Republican leadership and so many elected members of the Republican Party refuse to condemn this.
Yeah, there were only a few lonely voices from Republicans in the last few days really speaking out against this. Far more silence and, in some cases, mockery. And it's hard to see this getting better anytime soon. Christina Greer, one of our absolute favorites around here, thank you for joining us this morning. And one more story here before we go to break. The Supreme Court's conservative majority seems to be leaning toward an end to affirmative action in college admissions. Justice has heard arguments in cases challenging the admissions policies at both the University of North Carolina and Harvard University yesterday. Justices from the high court, 6-3 conservative tilt, questioned the legal basis and education benefits of affirmative action, the admissions policy that does use race as a factor in acceptance. Members of the court's liberal group defended the policies.
What we know, we have 9 states who have tried it, and in each of them, as I mentioned earlier, white admissions have either remained the same or increased. And clearly, in some institutions, the numbers for underrepresented groups has fallen dramatically, correct?
That's my understanding, yes.
Now, some conservative justices, like Chief Justice John Roberts, as well as Justice Amy Coney Barrett, who was a professor at Notre Dame Law School, seemed to be open to using some racial expression in admissions. The Supreme Court's ruling on these cases is due by June of next year. Still ahead here on Way Too Early, the latest from Ukraine, as parts of the war-torn country remain without power after the latest series of Russian missile attacks. Plus, Mark Meadows loses his bid to avoid appearing before the House Select Committee investigating January 6th. We'll explain why that doesn't necessarily mean the panel will get the information it's looking for. Those stories and a check on the weather when we come right back.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
Welcome back. And now to the war in Ukraine, where Russia is continuing to attack key infrastructure. Ukraine officials say yesterday that Russia damaged more than a dozen facilities, causing sustained power outages throughout the country. Ukraine also reports that Russia launched its heaviest missile barrage in weeks, striking 18 targets in 10 different regions throughout the day. Over the weekend, Russia cited drone strikes on its navy in the Crimean Peninsula as justification for withdrawing from a United Nations brokered deal to safeguard grain exports from Ukraine. Russia has been targeting Ukrainian infrastructure for weeks now, forcing citizens to stand in long lines for access to clean water. As the police in South Korea launch an investigation into a deadly stampede that killed more than 150 people at a massive Halloween celebration, many are asking why more officers weren't in place. NBC News foreign correspondent Janice Mackey-Frayer has the latest.
Chilling new details of the chaos in Seoul. Police revealing the Halloween crowd was up to 100,000 people before the stampede, many crammed into narrow alleyways. And there were just 137 police officers assigned to the area, police acknowledging they had no guidelines to deal with the horror that unfolded. American Janelle's story was near the top of the alley, her video showing people could barely move. It was so packed.
There was panic coming towards us.
People were desperately giving CPR to victims on the ground. Among the dead, two young Americans, Ann Gieske and Stephen Blessy, both 20-year-old students doing a semester abroad. She shared photos of them hiking and smiling for selfies just hours before the tragedy. Many parents here flooding a community center to find support.
Truly heartbreaking. Additionally, much of the world will be watching Brazil today to see what now outgoing President Jair Bolsonaro will do. Bolsonaro lost Sunday's presidential runoff election to Lula da Silva by less than 2 points, and so far, he has not officially conceded. In fact, Bolsonaro has remained out of public view since election night and has not delivered any remarks since losing. One of Brazil's largest newspapers reports his team did draft a concession speech for Bolsonaro to give yesterday, but then he didn't. Bolsonaro has hinted for months that he and his team may challenge the election results if they did not go his way. Since Sunday's election loss, Bolsonaro supporters have set up 200 road blockades in 18 states, and the nation is bracing for the potential of further unrest. We should note Bolsonaro, a close ally of former U.S. President Donald Trump. Current U.S. President Joe Biden has spoken to Brazilian President-elect Lula and was asked about that call yesterday.
Mr. President, how was your call with Lula from Brazil today, Mr. President? Your call with Lula from Brazil, the president-elect, how was it?
It went very well. We're putting the team together to get together and discuss what we can do together. He wants to focus on the environment, democracy, and dealing with the poor in his country and saving the Amazon.
Still ahead here, the January 6th committee could soon get testimony from a top name in the Trump White House. Meanwhile, a legal team for the former president makes a last-ditch effort to keep his tax returns private. That's all coming up on Way Too Early.
Hey, everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
183. Chubb breaks through. Touchdown, Cleveland.
Nick Chubb with his second rushing touchdown of the game to pad the Browns' big lead in the fourth quarter and, more importantly, give my fantasy football team a comeback win. Cleveland put it all together against the Bengals on Monday Night Football. Quarterback Jacoby Brissett ran for a touchdown, threw another, while the Browns defense sacked Joe Burrow five times and held the Bengals to just 229 total yards. Cleveland beats the Cincinnati 32-13. Turning now to the NHL, let's go to Buffalo and a big night for the Sabres, Taj Thompson. Thompson scored 3 goals and added 3 assists for a career-high 6 points last night to lead Buffalo to an 8-3 blowout win over the Detroit Red Wings. Big game for him. Now to the NBA, Milwaukee the Bucks. They're the league's only unbeaten team. Milwaukee's Jrue Holiday turned in a 24-point night against the Detroit Pistons, including that tie-breaking three-pointer with just 45 seconds left. Giannis scored a game-high 31. Brooke Lopez added 25. And the Bucks beat the Pistons 110-108. Last night's Game 3 of the World Series between the Phillies and the Astros was called off due to heavy rain in Philadelphia. The washout was announced about an hour before the scheduled first pitch. Instead, the tied series' first game at Citizens Bank Park will be tonight. The rest of the entire series shifts back a day. Game 4 will be tomorrow. Game 5 will be what had been the scheduled travel day, Thursday, which will compete with the NFL's Week 9 kickoff, which features the Philadelphia Eagles. Wow, Philadelphia sports fans will have need to have split screens for Thursday. The Eagles, the undefeated Eagles. You've also got Game 5 of the World Series. And assuming the series goes back to Houston, that will be this weekend. So time now for the weather. And meteorologist Michelle Grossman is here. Michelle, last night, obviously, rained out. Are they going to be able to play tonight?
They can play tonight. Yeah, the showers are moving out. And by the way, Eagles are playing in Houston.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny, right? Yeah.
Who knew there was such a rivalry between the two cities?
Nobody.
Yeah, just started.
Till now, exactly. So those showers are moving out of here. We're talking about warmth, though, widespread warmth. Temperatures well above normal for this time of year. 60s, 70s, some spots near 80 degrees tomorrow. So we're looking at temperatures 10 to 25 degrees above normal for this time of year. We could break some records. We're going to break more records tomorrow. Minneapolis, 73 degrees. That's 25 degrees above what is average for this time of year. St. Louis, 75, 68 degrees in Indianapolis, Cleveland, 64. That warmth extends into the Northeast and it extends into the weekend as well. So if you are a warm weather lover, you're going to love the weekend. Philadelphia, 71 degrees on Friday, 73 on Saturday. We're near 80 degrees in Nashville on Saturday at 78 degrees. Where it is not warm, that is in the West Coast. We're looking at higher elevation snow up to 14 inches in some spots. We have winter weather advisories. That's where you see the white. So the Cascades, the Sierra Mountains, especially Sierra Nevada, slick travel, also poor visibility. We're going to see winds gusting near 50 miles per hour at times. Where you see the pink here, this is widespread snow. Again, higher elevation snow, but still a lot of it. We're looking at pinks and purples. That's going to correspond to the highest mounds. So up to a foot in some spots, even up to 14 inches in some spots. As we go throughout the day here, we're going to see that cold front moving onshore. That's going to bring that rain. It's going to bring the snow. It's also going to bring winds gusting up to 50 miles per hour. Then we're going to see it moving inland as we go throughout tomorrow. Jonathan?
Michelle Grossman, thank you so much for that. Still ahead here on Way Too Early. Oh, there he goes again. Elon Musk making big changes after taking control of Twitter. We'll have the very latest on that ongoing saga when we come right back. Welcome back to Way Too Early. It's just before 5:30 a.m. on the East Coast, 2:30 out West. I'm Jonathan Lemire. Thanks for joining us this morning. Elon Musk's Twitter takeover appears to be complete. He has dissolved the 9-member board that oversaw the sale of the company to him. The move makes Musk the company's sole director. Last week, he fired Twitter's top executives immediately after the deal to buy the platform was finalized. Joining us now to talk about it, media reporter for the brand new news platform Semaphore, Max Tani. Max, great to be, for you to have be with us this morning. Thank you. So Elon Musk seems to be, well, he's in the news constantly, and he clearly likes to be the central character on Twitter.
Yeah, you don't
he,
say.
He has accomplished that in Donald Trump's absence. So let's just start with his reshaping of the company. Are more layoffs coming?
It seems almost certain that more layoffs are coming, and they're likely coming as soon as this week. As part of the deal, Twitter now has, Musk has a duty to pay off a tremendous amount of debt, and that's going to mean more layoffs. The layoffs should be kind of split into two buckets. One is some people that Musk seemed to want to get rid of somewhat ideologically, and then the other has to do with basically the business concerns and issues that Elon faces as part of this takeover. So we've seen kind of a lot of numbers being thrown about, but it seems almost certain that Musk is going to make a significant number of cuts and is going to make a significant number of cuts in the next few days. We've seen numbers as high as possibly 50% of the company. Either way, it's going to radically reshape how Twitter is going to look.
So let's talk about the content on Twitter. It's been well documented. that since Musk took over, there's been a surge in hate speech and racial epithets. There's also been a surge in disinformation, at least some, put out by Musk himself as he tweeted out that completely fake news article about the attack on Speaker Pelosi's husband. Where do things stand? What safeguards, if any, are going to be put in place?
Well, if there's one thing that we know about Elon Musk, it's that he thrives in kind of these somewhat uncertain spaces. And I think the reality is that it's hard to make predictions about what Elon wants to do, because I don't think Elon even completely knows what he wants to do. It's been reported that he is meeting with a number of top advisors to kind of reshape, to reevaluate basically what Twitter is going to do. And so I think that it seems, you know, it seems likely that he is going to, he's convening essentially a council of folks who are going to reevaluate and take a look at some of the standards and policies with regards to content moderation. And I think as a part of that, it's going to, they're going to take a look at hate speech and some of these other forms of, you know, issues that have actually impacted Twitter in the past.
And Musk has also floated a potential plan to have verified users pay to maintain their blue
check. That's true. Are you going to
pay? Mark status. That remains to be seen. Maybe it'll be a company decision. Lastly, shifting gears, you've got some new reporting on a controversial new expose report related to the COVID pandemic. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, that's right. As some of your viewers might know, over the weekend, Vanity Fair and ProPublica published a long kind of expose about a Senate report regarding the validity of the lab leak. And what we were able to report yesterday is that it turns out that ProPublica actually called a number of Mandarin to English translators after the story was published. People might realize why that's an issue. They were calling translators after the story.
Not usually the order of things.
Usually you call them before. But that just, basically the reason for that is because this report really relies on Communist Party documents and reading the tea leaves related to Communist Party pamphlets, essentially. And so there's been a large debate in the foreign policy community regarding basically Vanity Fair and ProPublica and the Senate report's interpretation of those documents. Some translators saying that they may have misread some of that information. And so clearly ProPublica is having second thoughts because they've contacted translators after the story
right.
published.
And certainly a political agenda at play, some Republicans pushing the idea that it was a leak rather than an accident. Great work on that. Max Tani of Semaphore, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Shifting gears now, a member of the far-right group, the Oath Keepers, who pleaded guilty to his role in the Capitol attack yesterday, testified against some of his former allies. Graydon Young said he was sorry for his actions on January 6th and claimed he thought he was taking part in a type of revolution, like the 1789 storming of the Bastille. His testimony comes in the fifth week of the trial against Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes and four others. Young, a 57-year-old former Navy reservist, told jurors he listened to what Trump's attorneys were saying about the election and that he got sucked into online conspiracy theories. He now admits that he was, quote, acting like a traitor, someone acting against my own government. Also, a federal judge has denied a bid by Trump's former chief of staff, Mark Meadows, to avoid testifying before the House Select Committee investigating January 6th. Meadows sought to block two subpoenas from the committee, including one to Verizon for his phone and text data. In a 27-page ruling, the judge argued that the committee's subpoenas were covered under the Constitution's speech or debate clause. Meadows will likely appeal the ruling, which could effectively put his testimony out of reach for the January 6th committee, because, of course, the panel is set to dissolve by the end of the year when the current congressional term expires. The fight over former President Trump's tax returns has reached the Supreme Court. Attorneys for Trump filed an emergency request to the high court yesterday in a last-ditch effort to stop the House Ways and Means Committee from accessing his tax records. If the Supreme Court doesn't grant Trump's request for an emergency stay by the end of tomorrow, the IRS would be free to turn over the records as soon as Thursday. Still ahead, we'll move to business news with a live report from CNBC and an early look at Wall Street, which is looking pretty good right now, plenty of green, but there are a few things on deck today that could swing the markets. We'll get into all of that when we come right back.
Time now for business. And for that, let's bring in CNBC's Arabile Gumede, who joins us live from London. Good morning, Arabile. Stocks notched a gain in October after two consecutive months of declines. Here we are, first day of November. What can we expect?
Yeah, looking very positive, aren't we? It looks like the market could be heading for a positive tilt today, more than 100 points gained, possibly then for the tech-heavy Nasdaq. Very interesting news point, of course, to speak about those tech counters, so we'll get into that. But the first piece of action will indeed be coming from the Federal Reserve. They're expected, of course, to bring out their decision. But the market won't be looking towards too much when it comes to corporate news, although sagas do tend to come out, of course, late in the year. That Santa rally is perhaps what we're headed for, but the first day of November does look to be a positive one, even across the Atlantic. Then if you head on over to Europe, most of the market there also in the green. So it does look like a positive day is what we're in store for.
Perhaps the most important financial news of the week will come in a few days when the Federal Reserve will likely raise rates for the sixth consecutive time to combat inflation, which is still running at its fastest pace in nearly 40 years. What are we expecting from the Federal Reserve? And is there any sense that this will be the last time they do this?
Yeah, that's clearly not, there's no clear sense that that is going to be the case, that this will be the last time that they hike interest rates, but it will be quite interesting what it is that they do project for the future, where they actually see inflation moving from here. Of course, there is a lag on effect with inflation, so if you hike interest rates now, you will only see the effect of those interest rates a little bit later on. Just that timeline is a bit different with each area. So yeah, we are expecting the Fed to hike interest rates. The FOMC is expected to give a sense that they have to do whatever is necessary in order to bring inflation back down into the single digits, but firmly to around that 2-3% mark as soon as possible. That effect, though, or that impact on things like GDP growth will, however, be massive, and we expected to hear some dire news when it comes to that estimation as well.
All right, Arabile, sit tight, because I got one more big money story for you. There were no winners in last night's Powerball drawing, as none of the tickets sold matched all six numbers. That means the jackpot for the next drawing tomorrow night will be $1.2 billion, the fourth largest in U.S. history. There have been 38 consecutive drawings without a jackpot winner at this point, meaning no one's hit all six numbers since August 3rd. As for the odds of winning, it is 1 in 292.2 million. So, steep odds, Arabile, but just in case, what would you buy with $1.2 billion?
Well, at this point in time, I might be able to get a little bit off of Twitter, right? Which seemingly is going to... Oh, maybe I'll be able to just pay for that blue tick for a lifetime on Twitter as well then, which is what Elon Musk is certainly proposing at this stage, right? $20 just to keep that blue tick on per month. So maybe the $1.2 billion lottery, if I was to win it, would certainly go to something like that. But man, what a draw it certainly is. And just how much further it would be from here, certainly going to be interesting.
Yeah, and with inflation these days, I mean, look, $1.2 billion doesn't go as far as it used to. But I'm sure we wouldn't turn it down. CNBC's Arabile Gumede live from London. Thanks for joining us. Still ahead here on Way Too Early, Republicans are ramping up their messaging on one specific issue now, just a week from Election Day. We'll dig into that issue and discuss the upcoming midterms with former New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. He'll join us when we come right back. Welcome back. With exactly 1 week to go until the midterm elections, Republicans have been working to make crime a top issue for voters heading to the polls. Across the country, GOP candidates like Dr. Mehmet Oz in Pennsylvania and Ron Johnson in Wisconsin have turned to an old playbook for their closing message by branding their Democratic opponents as soft on crime. According to recent Gallup polling, the economy still ranks as the top issue for Americans, but crime isn't that far behind. The data shows that 71% of Americans say crime is extremely or very important to their vote this year. Joining us here, former New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. Mr. Mayor, thank you for joining us. In your experience running the nation's largest city for 8 years, obviously crime and the battle against it was always top of mind and saw some record declines while you were at the helm. But this has become a very potent political issue for Republicans. So first of all, speak to the reality. Crime is up across the country. There's a sense of unease in a lot of our big cities right now, including New York. What should the Democrats' messaging be around it?
So I'll tell you, Democrats need to show empathy and feeling for what people are going through. The fear is real, right? You cannot wish it away. But at the same time, if we get stuck in it, we're not going to get anywhere. So what I would say is a message of optimism that we can turn the corner. Generally, at this point, I think Democrats have to close with an optimistic closing message to the voters, closing argument. Vis-a-vis crime, I'll tell you something. We know there are ways to fight it. As you said, 6 years crime went down pre-pandemic in New York City. We know that bonding police and community together works. Neighborhood policing was our initiative. We know violence interrupters work, community-based solutions to violence. Democrats need to talk solution. And one of the things that I think has been a little disappointing is it feels like Democrats are back on their heels, defensive. Folks pick up on that, understandably. But what we've got to say is, look, we've overcome crime before. Look, New York City's the best example in the world. You go back to the 80s, 90s. This was an extremely troubled place. We overcame it. We're going to overcome it again. This is all because of what the pandemic did to us. But Democrats have to show a way forward. We get it. And here's where we go next.
So certainly the Republican talking point of Democrats wanting to defund the police, we know that's been debunked. Very few Democrats ever supported
that's
that.
Right.
But there are some Democrats, whether mayors or perhaps district attorneys, a sense that they have become a little too permissive, allowing people back on the streets. How should there be a different approach right now?
Yeah, I think it's important to speak to that. It's exactly right for Democrats to say, no, we believe in fair, non-discriminatory policing. We believe in bringing police and community together. And one of the things I learned as mayor is that that work is really sacred to do, and it's far from finished. We had a real disconnect in 2020 because of the pandemic, because of the protests around the country. Healing and rebonding police and community is what's needed now, but you got to talk about it. You got to put that front and center. No, we are not interested in defunding. We're interested in rebonding and going the next step. See, one of the things that's so striking is at the community level, every day there are people fighting violence. They need our support. We tripled funding in New York City for violence interrupters. It brought shootings down in those communities deeply. Democrats need to talk solution. And I think to your point, if the Republicans are throwing at you defund, and it's not true, but you're not countering with a solution, it leaves that negative hanging in the air.
So on that idea, as a final question, idea of messaging here, we're 1 week out until voters are going to the poll. In some states, of course, is already early voting. What should the Democrats' closing argument be right now? You've obviously won citywide election as mayor twice. And you know, you're proud progressive, but it seems like a balancing act for Democrats right now to talk about some of their more liberal values, but also some of the pocketbook issues that Americans are dealing with each and every day.
Look, I think we've got a lot of evidence. The closing argument has to be optimistic. Barack Obama, 2008, Bill Clinton, 92, even with me in 2013, as we were going into that home stretch, I was expressing, my family was expressing a lot of hope for New York City. People picked up on that. I think one thing that's going on now is the defensiveness has infected Democrats too much. Closing argument that, in fact, we're putting money back in people's pockets. In fact, we're going to be able to turn the corner on everything the pandemic did to us. I think the shape of the argument right now has to be very much about the economy and the fact that we're going to lower prescription drug prices. We're going to make it easier for people to make ends meet. That kind of closing argument that gets to the kitchen table has always been the Democrats' strength. And what I find a little funny is, you know, Republicans want to pull towards the issues that they benefit from. Democrats always do better at the kitchen table. Economics, money back in your pocket.
All right. We appreciate this. We're going to continue this conversation later. You're back on Morning Joe in a couple hours. Former New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, thank you for joining us this morning. And up next here on Way Too Early, a midterm battle waged over the airways being fought in the courtroom. And coming up on Morning Joe, Steve Kornacki. He'll be back at the big board to break down the key races just 1 week before Election Day. Plus, a member of the House panel investigating January 6th, Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger will join us. Also ahead, the National Security Council's John Kirby will join us live from the White House. Morning Joe is just a few short minutes away.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.